Before we dive into today's discussion, we have a special resource just for you, a free ebook called Does It Make Sense to Believe in God? In today's world where faith is often labelled as outdated or irrational, this ebook takes a fresh look at the evidence for God. It features reflections from years of engaging with some of the world's leading atheists, like Richard Dawkins, and reveals why, after hearing every conceivable argument, our confidence in God's existence is stronger than ever. Download Does It Make Sense to Believe in God today for free at premierinsight.org/resources. That's premierinsight.org/resources. Now, let's get started with today's show.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Thank you for listening to the show that brings you the thought and theology of C.S. Lewis with me, Ruth Jackson. Discover more about Lewis by visiting premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, resources and podcasts. And you can also register there for the chance to win a free book. If you enjoy listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it. But now for today's show.
I know we are in the middle of a three-part series at the moment with Dan Barker and Carolyn Weber, but today we're taking a quick break from that to celebrate C.S. Lewis Reading Day. Following on from the inaugural C.S. Lewis Reading Day last year, Lewis fans around the world are going to be pausing to celebrate this great writer and his work on Friday, the 29th of November, which also happens to be C.S. Lewis's birthday. There are numerous online and in-person events to celebrate C.S. Lewis Reading Day this month, and you can find out more about these on the Pints with Jack website. I also want to encourage you to share some of your favourite C.S. Lewis quotations on social media using the hashtag C.S. Lewis Reading Day. And if you want any assistance with this, again, our wonderful friends at Pints with Jack can help. They've got so many great resources of Lewis quotes that you can download and share, and I'll make sure that I include a link to their website in the show notes. The theme for this year's C.S. Lewis Reading Day is friendship, and I am absolutely delighted to be joined by a fellow podcaster who knows about some of the key friendships in C.S. Lewis's life. Dr. Chris Pipkin is a professor of English at Emmanuel College in Georgia and host of the Inklings Variety Hour podcast. Chris, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Ruth. I'm really excited to have this crossover.
I like that. Big fan of your show, and love all of the other podcasts out there. There's a lot of love. People often ask me if there's kind of a rivalry between the C.S. Lewis podcast, but absolutely not. I think we're all just huge fans, and the more of us the better, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's one thing that's been really surprising to me joining this space back in 2020. David just reached out to me and was like, hey, I love what you all are doing. And here's more resources. He gave us advice and things like that. But yeah, everyone has been so welcoming.
Yeah.
I think Pints with Jack is a big reason why, although all the other podcasts I've spoken to.
We're all huge fans of Pints with Jack. We've done lots of stuff with David and the gang over there. So yeah, big fans of them. So Chris, before we talk about friendship, I'd love to find a little bit more about you and about your passion for Lewis. So would you mind just taking us right back to the beginning? How did you first discover C.S. Lewis?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's not a terribly exciting story. I've read Lewis pretty much from childhood. A lot of us, you know, in America, grew up evangelical, and one of the great things about the evangelical tradition, in my opinion, is that it does try to find that sort of detachable core of the gospel, right, that can be sort of plucked from one culture and, you know, sort of implanted in another. But one of the side effects often of that is that we can lose a lot of cultural trappings, right, and a lot of, like, the great historical stuff from the church, right? From church history, from older traditions, right? Gets lost. And one of the wonderful things about Lewis, as I was reading him, was that he allowed me to rediscover a lot of the sort of historical aspects of Christianity, of my faith. So, you know, growing up as a fairly, like, thoughtful, intellectually leaning kid, very often, I think that was seen by other evangelicals or you know, other parts of the American church as being like almost a detriment or something that gets in the way of Christianity. And one of the wonderful things about Lewis is that he was both more intellectual and more imaginative than just about anyone else I've read. I just kind of took to him immediately, more or less, right? Not from birth, but, from the time I was a child, I was reading lots of fantasy, including Narnia. We had tapes of the Screwtape Letters, read please, that we'd play in the car. And I pretty nearly memorized a lot of those letters in John Cleese's voice, which was wonderful. It's hard for me to detach Lewis's thinking from my own in some ways at this point. There are certainly things that I disagree with him about, but he's very much colored my worldview. All the way up to part of the reason I became a professor, part of the reason I got into literature, studied the medievals, is kind of down to Lewis's influence on me as well as Tolkien's.
Wow. And I mean, this might be like asking you your favorite child, Chris, but do you have a favorite book or quotation or work of Lewis, or is it too hard to sort of whittle down to just one?
It is pretty hard. I would say Till We Have Faces is probably my favorite novel, just sort of full stop. Maybe The Brothers Karamazov gets close to overtaking it. I'd say Till We Have Faces, which he also preferred, is pretty high up there. But, you know, like you said, it is hard to choose.
Brilliant. And do you think for C.S. Lewis Reading Day on the 29th of November, when we're all encouraged to kind of share some of our favorite quotes, is it going to be Till We Have Faces that you're quoting from, do you think?
I don't know. As far as favorite quotes, that is harder. There's the quote from The Weight of Glory that everyone, you know, sort of brings up that we are all, you know, living in a society of possible gods and goddesses or potential gods and goddesses, right? We're helping our neighbor every day toward glory, right? Or hindering them, right? And driving them the other way. But it's hard for me to say what a favorite quote would be.
Yeah. And I guess it changes as well, depending on what you're feeling and depending on what the situation is as well, right?
Yeah. How about yourself? Do you have a quote that you...
I don't know if anyone's ever asked me that because I'm always on this side. I think, I don't know, it's probably really cheesy to say this, but for me, it's the Narnia Chronicles. And so I think it's probably pretty much anything in The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe. Like if the witch, you know, went further back in time, she would read there a different incantation that went a traitor, all of that. But I think possibly The Magician's Nephew, where Diggory is looking at Aslan's feet and is asking for a cure and then looks up at his face and sees that actually his tears are bigger and brighter, and that for a moment Diggory thinks that the lion's grief is even greater than his own. And for me, that's just a beautiful depiction of John 11:35. I think, again, I could probably pick almost anything he's written, even just rereading The Four Loves earlier today to have a think about friendship. I was like, oh, I'd forgotten there's so much good stuff in there. So it's one of those things, isn't it, where you pick him up and you think, oh gosh, this is absolute gold. I mean, the content is gold, but just the way he says it is beautiful.
Right.
And I just don't think there's anyone like him.
He was such a master at taking complex and beautiful ideas and phrasing them as simply and lucidly as possible. And I really think that the Narnia books, like you're saying, are kind of the apotheosis of that, right? Writing for children, there are so many moments that so eloquently sum up aspects of the faith, right? Even I'm thinking of the moment in Voyage of the Dawn Treader where he says, you know, to where the star says to Ramandu, says to Eustace, when Eustace says, well, where I come from in my world, stars are just big flaming balls of gas. And Ramandu says, even in your world, that's not what a star is, only what it's made of. Right, that there is an inherent mystery to all things in our world that ultimately does point to God.
Yeah, It's brilliant. And just seeing the breadth of the people he's influenced as well. I'm interviewing Francis Collins, the incredible physician scientist, next week.
Oh, I love him.
Yeah, he's amazing. And I've been rereading his biography, The Language of God. And in the first chapter where he's talking about how he came to faith, mere Christianity was really integral to him coming to faith. But then within the next few chapters, he's quoted like probably six or seven of C.S. Lewis's books. He's such a massive C.S. Lewis fan.
Yeah,
and you kind of think he stretches from this amazing imaginative appeal to clearly appealing to some of the most intelligent people on the planet. So yeah, his scope is ridiculous.
Yeah. Francis Collins, I gave my, I love The Language of God. I gave it to my 11-year-old. He's been reading through it.
Wow.
Just loves it.
Well, if your 11-year-old has any questions for him, do let me know, because I will incorporate
right,
that in the... He's like, we're actually doing a debate between him and an atheist, so it should be really interesting.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. Well, before we start talking about friendship, clearly a core element of friendship was the Inklings. We're going to talk about the Inklings in a little bit, but would you just tell us a little bit about why your podcast on the Inklings started, Chris?
Yeah, so... I was, you know, it's very, in some ways, similar to why Lewis started writing science fiction, right? He and Tolkien were talking, and, you know, Lewis said to Tolkien, there's just not enough of the kind of stuff that we like out there. So we'll have to write some books like this of our own. But at the time, I was searching Inklings, right, in the Apple, podcast app, and couldn't find a whole lot on the Inklings. There were C.S. Lewis podcasts for sure. There were Tolkien podcasts, but there wasn't much about them as a community. You know, there was, I believe, the Wade Center, which is wonderful and excellent, but nothing that's just kind of relaxed and informal and, you know, talky. And so, yeah, I have a lifelong love of the Inklings and wanted to do a podcast that would sort of fill that need. And started out with two friends who have since gone on to other things, just don't have, you know, the time that they had during the pandemic to work on this. but yeah, it was very much a podcast started with friends and very much about, you know, this very influential group of friends.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
We're going to take a quick break now, but if you are enjoying today's show, please do consider rating it and leaving a review on your podcast platform so that other people can discover it too.
We're excited to announce the launch of a brand new podcast from Premier Insight called The Bible Explored with Rico Tice, featuring Rico Tice, a renowned British preacher and apologist. The Bible Explored with Rico Tice podcast offers practical guidance for living out the eternal truth of God's word in everyday life. It will inspire and equip you to boldly share the gospel, even in life's toughest situations. To continue creating content and resources like this, we rely on the generosity of listeners like you. Your support is vital to keep Premier Insights strong and ensure programs like the Bible Explored with Rico Tice podcast can reach more people and equip a generation of Christians to live out their faith with clarity, conviction, and confidence. Simply go to premierinsight.org/C.S. Lewis. That's premierinsight.org/C.S. Lewis. Thank you for your support.
The C.S. Lewis Podcast with Alistair McGrath.
Welcome back to the show. We would love to hear your thoughts and ideas. Do get in touch on social media at Premier Unbelievable. Now let's return to the conversation.
Well, let's talk about friends. I mean, who were some of the key friends in C.S. Lewis's life?
Yeah. So Lewis himself viewed friendships as immensely important, right? It was absolutely integral to his view of the good life, what the good life was. He very famously said that his favorite sound was the sound of male laughter. Back in the day when, you know, it was more normal for men to be friends with other men, right? He brings up friendship again and again in his nonfictional works, The Four Loves. He devotes a whole chapter to it, Surprised by Joy. which is an intellectual and spiritual memoir. It's about his conversion to Christianity, but it's a conversion that that occurs as a result of reading good books and finding good friends. So central to Lewis's experience of joy were his often horrible experiences at school, but also his close friendships. He puts it like this in The Problem of Pain. Are not all lifelong born at the moment when at last you meet another human being who has some inkling, but faint and uncertain even the best, of that something which you were born desiring, in which beneath the flux of other desires, and in all the momentary silences between the louder passions night and day, year by year, from childhood to old age, you're looking for, watching for, listening for. So friendship for him, and there's also, you know, he talks about this quite a bit in the chapter on philia, love, and the mm-hmm. four loves. It's being deeply interested in something else with someone else, even if that person is quite unlike you. I think most of his deep friendships, to some extent or another, took this pattern, although I think some more so than others. So who are his friends? I think a lot of times his brother gets left out of this conversation, but it's important not to overlook Warren Lewis, Warnie, mm-hmm. And thinking about Lewis's friends. Most brothers are not, and back then weren't, as close as the Lewis brothers were. They wrote and drew pictures together of an imaginary animal land called Boxen when they were young boys. So already Lewis is kind of collaborating with someone on a project, right? They lived together for most of their lives. Warnie lived with Lewis at the Kilns. He stayed with him in his rooms at the college. They had the same circle of friends in Oxford, which included the Inklings. They're even buried together, right? So I think even more interesting than this, though, is the fact that Lewis's first experience that he talks about in Surprised by Joy, of what he called joy or Sehnsucht, happened when he looked at a model boy garden in a biscuit tin that had been constructed by his brother. This was a foundational moment for Lewis, really the beginning of this intellectual quest, right? And aesthetic quest. And his brother was right there with him, experiencing it, even if he didn't maybe feel the same stab of joy at the toy garden. So I think was a really important influence, even if Lewis, you know, being a brother, right? Obviously, you're coming from the same place, so it doesn't seem as much of a miracle when you share the same sympathies as someone who comes from somewhere else. And that was definitely Lewis's closest friend, lifelong friend, not a member of the Inklings, actually, Arthur Greaves. But I'm talking a lot, so is there anything that you'd want to add to that?
Well, no, I guess, would you just paint a picture for us about who the Inklings were? I mean, we hear some of these names like J.R.R. Tolkien and Charles William, but would you just fill in a little bit of the history? How did the Inklings start? Do we know who some of them were? I mean, it was quite a fluid group, wasn't it? It wasn't always the same people coming, and Warnie was clearly part of that as well. But would you just give us a little bit of a picture of what some of the Inklings were like, where they all came from, why they bonded so much, what the purpose was of the group?
Yeah, absolutely. Lewis and Tolkien had already become friends before the Inklings formed. And in many ways, the Inklings was an outgrowth of that relationship between Lewis and the Lewis brothers and Tolkien. Tolkien had created this vast interior mythology based on languages, and he showed him some drafts of early poems. Some drafts of early poems when they're both working at Oxford and both involved in a club called the Colby Tars, which is a club where they read Norse sagas together, right? But Lewis loved the poems. It was incredibly gratifying to Tolkien. He also offered strong criticism of aspects of the poems, which was also very gratifying to Tolkien because he took it seriously. And I think really from that seed of friendship and involvement and collaboration, seeing kind of the same sorts of things as beautiful or good or worthy, the Inklings sort of began to assemble, right? So the Inklings originally was actually a creative writing group started by an undergraduate at Oxford. And this group of professors and dons and other friends of C.S. Lewis basically resurrected it and took it over and grabbed the name and continued meeting. They would meet generally Thursday nights at Lewis's rooms in Magdalen College in Oxford. And there, every night, Warnie would come out, would offer tea and something stronger than tea usually to the others, and they'd get to talking and drinking together. And then at a certain point, Lewis would always interrupt with his loud, booming voice and say, "Well, has nobody got anything to read?" And that was the moment when they would produce their, manuscripts they'd been working on that week, and read a bit and then get strong critique from the other Inklings. This is famously how The Lord of the Rings was written, right? This is Tolkien would bring new drafts of The Lord of the Rings to the Inklings meeting, but many other works as well. Some of Charles Williams' later works, Lewis's Pain, Screwtape Letters, most of the things that Lewis would have written in the 30s and 40s read aloud first to this group of friends. So, and they would also, many of them, meet together at the Eagle and the Child on Tuesdays, but that was more informal. It wasn't so much a creative writing collaboration sort of group or creative writing and criticism. But yeah, they would usually talk well into the night on Thursday nights, into the wee hours of the morning. Not only Tolkien would be there and Lewis, but also in the 40s, especially when he had moved to Oxford for in order to get away from the bombing during the Blitz. Charles Williams, who Lewis had become very good, very close friends with, and so had Tolkien, despite things he said later in the late 30s and early 40s. So it was quite a diverse range of characters. Lewis tended to say that they had two things in common: Christianity and a tendency to write. And it was very much a group where you couldn't just bring random people along, right? You had to be invited. You had to ask permission of the members. But yeah, it was basically Lewis's circle of friends and circle of friends that he shared interests in writing with. I don't know if that.
Yeah, that's really helpful.
Approaches answering your question.
Really helpful. And how integral were those friendships to Lewis? I mean, obviously, it informed his writing to a certain extent, but
right.
did it extend beyond the literary? Was he really impacted by their friendships in other ways, do we know?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, so many of the other Inklings had wives and families. For Lewis, while he did have a domestic situation back at the kilns, that was different, right? the main place where he received validation, the main place where he enjoyed himself, right, was in the company of friends. He processed things with friends. He thought alongside friends. I don't know how much of his personal life he went into with friends, because one often didn't do that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But with Arthur Greaves, who I mentioned earlier, who was not one of the Inklings, he was back in Ireland. He did write a lot about his personal life, right? But yeah, most of the Inklings themselves, they were buddies. They would hang out. They'd drink together, right? They would spend time together. They had a common vision of the good, and they pursued it together. Yeah, so it certainly wasn't just about critiquing each other's work. One thing that struck me as we were talking about this, though, that's odd to me, is that while Lewis writes about friends throughout his nonfiction, right? He writes about it in Surprised by Joy. He writes about friends and friendship in his nonfiction, his apologetic works. Friendships aren't really the subject of his fiction the way they are the subject of, say, Tolkien's fiction,
yeah.
Right? I mean, Tolkien's first part of The Lord of the Rings was The Fellowship of the Ring, right?
Yeah.
And before the Fellowship is even formed, you have hobbits who are friends and who talk about their friendship and things like that. So, and even, in the Hobbit, right? It's Bilbo and the dwarves and their friends. That doesn't seem to be as important to Lewis's fiction, which is odd, and I'm not sure why. But it's strange.
Yeah, it is really, that's a really interesting point, because it is such an important feature of his nonfiction, isn't it? You'd think that would have translated. I mean, you obviously see glimpses of it, don't you, in the Narnia Chronicles and perhaps in that hideous strength that the community of St. Anne's. But you're right, it is, it's not anywhere near as prominent as it is in, say, The Lord of the Rings.
Right. Yeah, and even in, you know, Barfield's works. Owen Barfield, by the way, another great friend of Lewis, didn't put the Inklings, although there's been some, you know, pushback on that by, say, Harry Lee Poe, just saying, like, he probably didn't make it to many Inklings meetings. He certainly came once or twice, but Barfield also had this view. You know, he dedicated his, Lewis dedicated his first book, The Allegory of Love, to Barfield, to the wisest and best of my official teachers. And Owen Barfield dedicated Poetic Diction to C.S. Lewis, which was his first book. And he wrote Opposition is True Friendship, the dedication. So for Barfield, even, when he wrote works like, say, a very obscure work called Night Operation, right? It's about three friends who manage to get out of a dystopian society together, partly because they see different truths rather than the same truth. But that's very much about friendship. But yeah, for Lewis, while friends do appear, like in, say, Narnia and that hideous strength, like you were saying, it doesn't seem to be as prominent a theme in Lewis's writing, even though obviously in his thought, it's a very prominent theme, right? Even though he thought that friends were an indispensable central part of life. But yeah, it's odd.
So what do you think are some of the things that we can learn from Lewis about friendship?
I would say really one of the best places to turn for that is The Four Loves, mm-hmm. right? Where he talks about philia and distinguishes it from Eros, right? And distinguishes it also from storge, which is like family affection, right? You know, I think one of the things that he says about friendship that's fascinating is that it isn't clearly tied to a biological drive, right? Eros is, obviously, and storge, which results from Eros, is as well, right? The love of one family member for another, right? But philia, friendship love, is almost in some ways unnecessary, right? So central to Lewis's own life, he characterizes it as unnecessary, and that's part of the reason it's so wonderful, right? One of the ways that we can think about friendship when it happens is it's a kind of grace that doesn't need to be in the world or in our experience, and yet it is. It's always a gift, right? So he was deeply grateful for and appreciative of his friends. And sought, to some extent or another, sought friends out, sought friendships. I think very often, you know, that is something that, especially in the modern world, since Lewis's day, this trend has continued even more. People do tend to isolate themselves. They do tend to neglect friendship. I certainly do, right? This is very easy for people to do who have families, right? Whereas for Lewis, who didn't have a family until having a sort of family later, you know, later in life, thought a great deal more about friendship and sought out friends a great deal more.
Yeah, he does say that, actually, doesn't he? There's a line that is still so relevant today, I think, where he says, "To the ancients, friendship seemed the happiest and most fully human of all loves, the crown of life and the school of virtue. The modern world, in comparison, ignores it." And I think that's even more true today, isn't it? That to a certain extent, we ignore friendship. We actively seek out love, you know, Eros love and all of that. But I don't know that people are actively out to make friends, are they?
Yeah. I mean, I was up until, I was as a teenager, right? As a kid, right?
Right.
Of course you want friends, right? And you do all these things to try to get, but, you know, after we've sort of established ourselves and you know, gotten married or whatever else, very often that desire for friends can sort of peter out. And actually, you know, the science behind friendship is it does prolong your life, right? It actually enriches your life and makes you healthier generally. Lewis, of course, didn't have a terribly long life, but but you know, it certainly enriched his life to have close friendships.
Yeah, I actually did a podcast with a guy called Phil Knox, who's written a book on friendship, and we talked a lot about that, the kind of statistics and the fact that we're in a sort of lonelier, statistically lonelier than we ever have been, and the kind of the dearth of friendships and how we can improve that and what we can learn from Lewis, which was fascinating. I'll make sure I put a link to that on the show notes. But one of the things that I really like that he says in The Four Loves is around the fact that friendship isn't exclusive in the way that, say, Eros love is. Obviously, if you're in a romantic relationship and you bring another person in, that's generally frowned upon. Whereas with friendship, he says, you know, Eros, while it lasts, is necessarily between two only, but two, far from being a necessary number for friendship, is not even the best. And the reason for this is important. True friendship is the least jealous of loves. Two friends delight to be joined by a third, and three by a fourth. And actually, I think that's a really beautiful picture of the Inklings, isn't it? That perhaps it, I don't know, in my romantic head, it started with Tolkien and Lewis, and then it grew into Warney and Charles, you know, and it just grew and grew and grew. And actually, the group growing, far from making it worse and diluting it down, actually it just brought in more elements. And sure, it brought in bits of controversy, and you know, it wasn't all plain sailing, but actually it enhanced the friendship, and it made their friendship between the two even stronger by adding the three and the four and the five. And I think that is a really beautiful thing, and something that we could certainly take in today's society that feels quite lonely and quite devoid of genuine friendship.
He brings up the death of Charles Williams there, right?
He does.
It says, you know, now that Charles is gone, I've lost the aspect of John, probably Tolkien, right? Mm-hmm. Charles brings out, right? There's a way in which more friends, probably up to a certain, you know, point, right? actually enriches and brings out aspects of the friends that we have already. You know, I found that to be true, certainly, not only in friendship love, but also when it comes to children. There are aspects of my kids that when we've, you know, added another one to the brood, right, suddenly you can see new sides of that. Mm.
Yeah. Well, as we come to the end of this show, I mean, is there any particular way that you think you're going to be celebrating C.S. Lewis Reading Day on the 29th of November? And is there anything that you've been reminded of about the importance of friendship that you're going to take with you into the coming weeks and months and hopefully into next year as well, Chris?
Yeah. As far as C.S. Lewis Reading Day goes, I am horrible at remembering dates, remembering it's a problem with being an English professor and numbers. So if I remember to celebrate C.S. Lewis Reading Day, I mean, one thing I will be doing
I'll hound you on social media, Chris.
Yeah. I'll join the, you know, Pints with Jack live stream, and that will be fun. And that also, you know, to a certain extent, does touch on your second question, is I found a really great community, most of whom I have not met in person, through the, you know, different C.S. Lewis podcasts. I've had various ones of them on my show to talk about books. And it's wonderful to, the internet does take a lot away from us in terms of the ability to connect with other people, especially the people who are around us, right? But one thing that it's especially good at is connecting us with people who have similar interests, right? It's now easier to find someone who enjoys the same things as you, which of course can be a danger because you can become siloed and, you know, even more stuck in your way of viewing things, right? It's wonderful to be able to connect with people about things that you, things that you love, things that you enjoy, and, you know, to the extent that they are other people and other souls, right? Broadening your appreciation even of those things. I don't know that there's something in terms of I to do differently in the new year or whatever else, other than continue to find friends and talk with friends. But how about yourself?
Well, I think what, as you were saying all that about the C.S. Lewis community, which I've fairly recently come into and been so blessed to, actually, I did get to meet some of them in person at the Undiscovered Lewis conference, which was incredible. And it is that experience that Lewis talks about in The Four Loves, where he says, "What, you too? I thought I was the only one." And actually just that sense of, oh my goodness, you're a bit of a geek about that too. You've read that line and pulled out that thought. And, you know, it's, yeah, everything has got even greater. I remember coming back from that conference, I was just like, man, I want to go back and reread everything I've ever read on Lewis, and I want to read all his letters and all the, I mean, there's such a wealth of knowledge in the C.S. Lewis community. And as we were saying at the beginning, it doesn't feel at all jealous. I mean, that's perhaps because friendship is the least jealous of all the loves, but there is this incredible community. So yeah, I think I've just been reminded that actually it's sharing that friendship doesn't in any way lessen or dilute the friendship, and that's a really powerful thing. So I think I'm gonna certainly take that. It's encouraging what you say about children as well, because I'm about to have my second one, so hoping that that might rub off the edges of my first rather spirited child.
that's wonderful. Yeah it's certainly, you know, there's a reason that heaven is a community of people. We are made to be in community with each other, to bring out those facets of each other, you know, as Lewis sort of, you know, points out in that chapter.
Yeah. Well, Chris, how do we find out more about your podcast?
Yeah. So if you look up the Inklings Variety Hour, you'll find it in some form or other. We are hosted by Podbean, so you can, you know, do it there. You can also look it up on the, you know, on the Apple Podcast app, or really any podcast app. It's a fairly eclectic group of recordings about the Inklings. We sort of range far and wide, from particular far lesser known members of the Inklings to, you know, fan fiction, to covering Narnia books, to looking at, you know, works by Roger Lanson Green, for example. But yeah, it's really enjoyable to do. I have fun in.
Brilliant. Oh, well, thank you so much for joining us today, Chris.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Ruth.
Don't forget to share your favourite C.S. Lewis quotes on social media, if you can remember the date, the 29th, Friday the 29th of November, using the hashtag C.S. Lewis Reading Day. And there are more details about how you can get involved and a list of events and live streams at pintwithjack.com/readingday. Thank you for listening to the C.S. Lewis podcast with me, Ruth Jackson. Many of the topics that we've touched on today are discussed in greater detail on earlier episodes of the programme. Check out our archive of past shows at premierunbelievable.com, where you can also find lots of great articles, videos and podcasts. Plus, if you register on our website or sign up for our newsletter there, then you will get exclusive access to new content, free resources and more. That's premierunbelievable.com. What did you think of today's show? Are there any topics or works of C.S. Lewis that you would like us to explore next? We would love to hear from you. Send us an email, unbelievable@premier.org.uk. Connect with us on X, formerly known as Twitter, @premierunbelievablefe, or drop us a direct message on Instagram or Facebook @premierunbelievable. We have also recently launched on TikTok, so if that's your thing, or you know anyone else who might be interested, then you can find us there @premier.unbelievable. Your feedback and thoughts are so important to us, so please get in touch. If you're enjoying the C.S. Lewis podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing it on whatever platform you're listening on, as it helps more people to discover the show. Thank you for listening, and see you next time.